station. Much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
NASA discovered, and were very excited about having found this, what they term Planet X. X is the Roman numeral for the number 10, meaning the 10th planet in the universe. They were very excited to discover it on December 31st, the year 1983. But suddenly, the chief scientist of the infrared astronomical satellite system that sent this thing into deep space, and they sent back pictures of it, and they released it to six of the top daily newspapers around the world. Suddenly the government came in, started putting a lid on all this information. But now we find out, just on the week of January 7th, the year 2002, that all of a sudden they're squashing all of this information and keeping it from the public. They said that it was an asteroid when finally they began to admit that it was there. But now in Newsweek magazine, they actually show it with a reflection, because now any astronomer on Earth can get a picture of it. And so, the year 2002, January 7th, they finally admitted there is another planet, and it's heading toward the Earth, between the Earth and between the Sun, and it will displace the gravity of the Sun temporarily as it passes by, just as it did in the days of Peleg. Only the largest control telescopes that have been controlled by the government for years have seen Planet X, until I just mentioned they admitted that it is a real planet January 7th, 2002. But they began to see it in 2001. It was easy to cover it up until then. But then, all of a sudden, in the year 2001, small to mid-level observatories, such as the Lowell Observatory in Arizona, one in South America, one in Switzerland, began to see that there was something there, and it was moving. And according to their calculations, it was heading toward our solar system, because it had orbited out of our solar system. Occasionally, you would expect, with such an overwhelmingly important worldwide story, some of the details would be let out somewhere at some time. They have been. One of the headlines was, massive population shrinkage. They also wondered out loud, And it was recorded on microphone during one of their, what we would term in Britain, a parliamentary session, or in a congressional session in the United States. It's a Politburo session in Russia. They even wondered if their nation would even exist anymore at all. Government officials, you can be sure, can be trusted to protect none of us. They won't even release this information. They will not try to protect any of us because they know they can't. But they started a mysterious building program underground in at least 129 underground facilities from one end of the country to the other has been completed. We always thought that it was in case of a nuclear weapon, but we found out that it's not. It's in case Planet X comes our way. We need to understand how and why and when the Earth's surface is going to change so abruptly, and it will fulfill in great detail every single item of the Bible, the scriptures that I'll show you. Some of this information came off the wire service of ABC News in the year 2000. Others of it came from BBC. Talking about a planet beyond Pluto heading this way. There's absolutely nothing that anyone can do about it. They're actually talking that the population of this world could be reduced by 90%. Does that sound logical to anyone? Could it be? If 90% of the population is going to die when this planet comes into this atmosphere or into our orbital structure and all the planet begins to shift, whole land masses sink, others rise, then wouldn't it be to our advantage to be sealed by the God of the universe for divine protection, to be kept as in secret?
Well, hello, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day radio show, coming to you live from the Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona. It's Saturday, April 17th, 2010. I hope you enjoyed that little opening bite I played there. Something was happening for a few seconds with the volume. I couldn't figure that out, but I'll probably play it again here at some point. Anyway, we're live from the Sonora Desert. If anybody wants to send me an email, it's gem3intucson@q.com. That's G as in girl, E as in echo, M as in Mary. The number 3intucson@q.com. Now, me and John DiNardo, that's my returning guest for tonight. If anybody wants to read his bio, you can go to my homepage and read it there, because we're not going to have enough time to cover his bio again, but it's posted on my homepage. Me and John have some bullet points we want to throw at the audience about the reality that Planet X does indeed exist. The first one is a New York Times article published January 30th, 1983. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X. The second bullet point is, since the discovery of Uranus and Neptune in the late 1700s and early 1800s, astronomers have seen perturbations at a specific point in the orbits of these two outer planets. This can only be caused, folks, by the influence of another massive body out by those planets. Three, Dr. John Murray, Dr. John Matisse, and Dr. Brian Marsden all independently noticed distinct perturbations of comets in the Oort cloud, which form an arc, obviously by gravitational attraction. Visualize, folks, the arc that would form from a magnet passing over a surface uniformly covered with iron filings. Four, virtually the largest newspaper in America, the Washington Post, printed a front-page article on December 30, 1983, reporting from NASA and JPL that a giant celestial object as large as Jupiter had been sighted by the infrared astronomical satellite. Bullet point number five, a few days later, after the government obviously muzzled them, they printed a retraction stating that they had made a mistake. Number six, the second largest news magazine in America, Newsweek, published an article about Planet X in the September 10th, 1984 issue. number seven, Dr. Robert S. Harrington, who was the supervising astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Tom Van Flandren calculated the position of Planet X based upon the perturbations of the outer planets. And, by the way, folks, Thomas Flandren dies 11 months before the continuity of government contingency planning was to prepare, was to complete their deadline with getting the underground shelters finalized. Flandren dies from colon cancer, just like his old U.S. Naval Observatory partner, Robert S. Harrington, only Flandren died from esophageal cancer. Bullet point number eight. Dr. Harrington dispatched a telescope to the observatory in Black Birch, New Zealand, in mid-1992. In his October 1991 published paper, Harrington stated that he had no reason to change his determination of Planet X's specific location in the southern skies. In January 1993, Dr. Harrington was dead of a fast-acting esophageal cancer. All information about, before he was to come back to the United States to hold a press conference, by the way, to announce to the world the existence of Planet X. All information about the telescopic photo plates taken of Planet X has been totally suppressed. Even with his death, they buried Harrington and his photographic evidence that X was just about where he had estimated and it was moving into our solar system. Also, folks, we have climate change, which is happening on all of the planets. And guess what? You can't blame the sun on this, as the solar activity has been way too low the last 2 years or so. And these planets don't have cow flatulence or SUVs on them, by the way. Let's see here. Next bullet point. Only 8 months to get that seed vault built up in Only took 8 months to get that seed vault built up in Norway, folks. Another bullet point. Let's see here. Here we go. NASA shuts down the 30-year-old space shuttle program and awards a $74 million contract to an outside vendor, specifically a subsidiary of Prudential, in late August of 2007 to initiate the process of relocating key essential personnel of NASA between September of 2007 through September of last year, with an option to extend that contract by up to 3 years if so desired. If that contract is extended to the maximum, it would go until September of 2012, but I don't, according to John Moore's information anyway, we don't have that long probably. And by the way, I've talked to John Moore privately on the phone. Even though Professor McCanny says there is no evidence of a ensuing incoming Planet X type object at this time, he does agree with John Moore that by December 2012, these cataclysmic Earth changes will be so far underway or finished that it won't even matter anymore. Next bullet point. The strategic placement of the South Pole Telescope. How come there's no North Pole telescopes? Interestingly enough, many comets like Kalebop came up from the south, and so did four comets which struck the sun early last month. And I believe you can go to Professor McCanny's March 18th archive to learn more about that. The last bullet point I have, even though John DiNardo did send me a lot more, but the last one I'm going to mention is, it doesn't make any sense, folks, that the elite are going underground to escape earthquakes if they're inducing them, unless they're trying to evade the solar scorching that'll occur as Planet X flies by us. Now, I also wanted to point this out. There was an extreme event that occurred over seven Midwestern states. This was on Thursday, I believe, including Wisconsin, the state I'm from. I've seen the video of it online. Pretty extraordinary the way this thing flashed and then dimmed and then flashed. It was quite a fireball. But I also wanted to remind folks about this. This is from space.com back on June 10th of last year. The article's entitled Military Hush-Up, incoming space rocks now classified. For 15 years, scientists have benefited from data gleaned by U.S. classified satellites of natural fireball events in Earth's atmosphere, but no longer. A recent U.S. military policy decision now explicitly states that observations by hush-hush government spacecraft of incoming bolides and fireballs are classified secret and are not to be released. So you can just put that into a search engine, incoming space rocks now classified, and you'll pull up the article. I don't want to read the whole thing because I'm keeping John DiNardo on hold here, but yeah, that may be another dot connector as to what the elite are really up to. And by the way, talking about this fireball scene over the Midwest Thursday night, the following day, Obama visited the Kennedy Space Center and outlined a plan to send astronauts to land on an asteroid 15 years from now. On the day the president announced the goal, NASA task force of scientists, listen to this, folks. On the day the president announced the goal, a NASA task force of scientists, engineers, and ex-astronauts was meeting in Boston to work on a plan to protect Earth from a cataclysmic collision with an asteroid or a comet. NASA has tracked nearly 7,000 near-Earth objects that are bigger than several feet across. Of those, 1,111 are potentially hazardous asteroids. That's a big number, folks. Objects bigger than two-thirds of 1 kilometer are major killers and hit Earth every several hundred thousand years. Experts don't have a particular asteroid in mind for the deep space voyage, but there are a few dozen top candidates, most of which pass within about 8 million kilometers of Earth. Most of the top asteroid candidates are less than 400 meters across. Well, I'm going to bring my guest now, John DiNardo here. He's going to probably give you some more bullet points, and we're also going to try to offer some solutions as to what we can do here, because we don't want folks to get too alarmed and think that this is just a end of the earth scenario. But anyway, I'm going to bring John on now here. Hello, John. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello, Sheldon. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Were you able to hear everything while I had you on hold?
Yes, I heard everything.
Okay, well, you have the floor. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Sheldon. It's hard to know where to start because there's just a huge array of evidence that comes from so many fields of human study, from the field of science, astronomy, within science, the field of astronomy, the field of meteorology, the field of geology, the field of archaeology, ancient history, biblical accounts. There's just so much evidence, and also I thought I heard something. That was my voice echoing. Also, we cannot ignore the accounts of psychics. Now, I'm a person that comes from the scientific field, and I never have believed in anything anything metaphysical, supernatural. But there are so many accounts of psychics throughout history predicting this event, one of whom was the great sleeping prophet Edgar Cayce. And we have to observe and analyze the accounts of prophets and see how they align with one another, how they all agree. And these prophets come from different civilizations, different languages, different periods in history. It's just amazing. So the evidence is extremely widespread. But I'll begin by saying we have to get ourselves psychologically prepared to understand what's happening, because the human mind will tend to reject and flee from the fear of catastrophic disaster on Earth. It's only natural. But when a person flees from fear, what they do is they run into it, straight into the arms of disaster, because they hide under the covers and they pretend that it's not there, and then that's when you're most vulnerable to the perils. We can avoid perils. We can do things that will protect ourselves, and we're going to talk about that. So the first thing is, please open your mind and have courage and understand what's happening and realize that we're going to be able to protect ourselves. Many of us will be able to protect ourselves from this. Planet X is like a bus. The reason archaeology and ancient history attest to the incoming flight of this huge comet is because it's like a huge bus that comes in on a specific bus route at a specific period. It takes a specific period of time to go out from our solar system and revolve around a far distant sun, which is called our sun's twin sun. Now, this is not my estimation, not my analysis, but it is the analysis of astronomers and scientists that 3 out of 4 solar systems that have been detected by astronomers have been found to have a twin sun. They call these binary solar systems. Our solar system is like most other solar systems. It is binary. There is a twin sun that's estimated to be billions and billions of miles out. I don't know how far out. But it's also known to be a dead sun. And as a result, it never lit, but it still has the mass of our sun. And as a result, because of its huge mass, it acts as a bus terminal, so to speak, a gravitational bus terminal for this huge bus, which we call Planet X. As it takes 3,600 years to go all the way out from our solar system, all the way out of our solar system through deep space, billions and billions of miles until it reaches their distant sun, which has, as I said, equal mass or great mass just like our sun has. And as a result, Planet X, this bus, is being drawn to that distant bus terminal, the dead sun. Now, what it does is, by physical explanation, physicists will tell you, and our astronomers will tell you too, that a massive body such as a planet or as such as one of our space capsules is known to whip around or loop around a celestial body. And that's exactly what Planet X does. It does not hit it. There's something called repulsion force that prevents the two planets from actually colliding if their mass is very great. They get very close. They will not collide, but one planet will actually go past the other one. And because of it's drawn in by this tremendous mutual gravitational attraction between the two. I'm hearing my voice echo in the background, and I have to try not to concentrate on it because it is distracting. But anyway, when this Planet X reaches near its distant sun, its inertia, its momentum will allow it to surpass the sun, to travel past it. And when it does that, it's like a rubber band that's being pulled back, because now it's going in the opposite direction. It's going away from the distant sun even further. And that gravitational attraction then begins to pull it back again. So what you see is a looping effect. Planet X will loop around the distant sun and then come back. And as it comes back, it goes very slowly through deep space and approaches our solar system. And that's essentially what happens with this bus that's on its recurring bus trips. And it takes approximately 3,600 years each time to go around and into our solar system. And when it does,
We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned. We're coming into a break.
Guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Jason Walker. Shuttle Discovery wrapping up a 10-day stay at the International Space Station, now making its way back home. Discovery due at the Kennedy Space Center Monday. That is the same day the shuttle Atlantis will be rolled out to the launch pad to begin preparations for its final flight on May 14th.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day, coming to you live Saturday night, April 17th, 2010. I was getting some feedback here in my headsets when I had John on, but I isolated that down to what was going on. This is kind of tricky. I haven't done this in a while. So we're going to bring John back on now and let him give out some more of his evidence. So go ahead, John.
Okay. Thank you, Sheldon. So visualize, as a visual aid, folks, visualize a bicycle with an extraordinarily long length, such that the wheels are very far apart, and of course the bicycle chain is very long. The front sprocket wheel would represent our sun. The rear sprocket wheel is located at the center hub of the rear wheel, that would represent the distant sun. And the bicycle chain itself would represent the path, the orbital path of Planet X. Planet X might be one little link on that bicycle chain, so visualize this very long bicycle with this very long bicycle chain turning very slowly, and it takes 3,600 years for this planet, this link on the bicycle chain, to go all the way around the distant sun, that's the rear sprocket wheel, and then come back to the loop around the front pedal sprocket wheel.
Hey, John?
Yes.
Did your echo go away?
I think so. Yeah, it seems to be very slight or not noticeable at all now. That's good news.
Okay, continue, please. Thanks.
All right, so right now we're seeing it coming into our solar system. We're seeing the effects of it. Incidentally, while I'm describing this cyclical incursion of Planet X, I might add that there is, Sheldon mentioned that Professor McCanny said that there's no evidence. Well, actually, about four months ago, our U.S. government, NASA, it's in the Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite. Chandra, spelled C-H-A-N-D-R-A, X-ray Observatory satellite, did actually sight Planet X. And this information that they put out, they did actually report that they saw this huge comet, but they were not able to identify it. That's the falsehood right there. But the fact that they did notice a huge comet, I guess it was impossible to cover it up. So they actually made this report, but the report was buried somewhere in the news. Dr. Bill Deagle reported it, and other people have reported the sighting by the Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite. Also, there was Marshall Masters, a former science editor for CNN, Cable News Network, has done a lot of research on Planet X, and he has a website. He's been putting out books and information on Planet X. Very good scientific information as a man of, in the science field in, within the mainstream media. And he has mentioned that there he had reported that someone had put on the Internet actual footage, film footage or photographs of Planet X that was taken by the South Pole Telescope. This is a secret telescope. It's not been revealed to the public. They spent millions of dollars to construct this South Pole Telescope in 2007. And in January of 2008, there was someone who was probably either a friend or acquaintance or one of the astronomers themselves at the South Pole Observatory who put this visual information, this photographic evidence of Planet X on the YouTube. Okay, within one day, this photographic evidence of Planet X taken from the South Pole Telescope was taken down. The person who put it up gave the name, the handle of Nibiru Shock 2012. Nibiru is the ancient name for Planet X, given to it by the ancient Sumerian people who lived thousands of years ago. So that the name Nibiru is spelled N-I-B-I-R-U. If you ever want to do a search, you'll find a lot of information when you Google that particular term. But Nibiru Shock 2012, his information was taken down, and then somebody else came up with something to discredit him. They claimed to be Nibiru Shock 2012. It was a bogus person. And that person said, I stated that what I gave you was a hoax. In other words, this phony Nibiru Shock 2012 was stating that what he had put out was a hoax. Well, it was not the same person. It was somebody from the government, obviously. Marshall Masters did a whole study of it. Marshall Masters actually received an email from Nibiru Shock 2012, and he has that particular letter, that email, available to people who subscribe, but he has put out everything, all the other information that is available freely on the Internet in the form of videos.
Hey, John.
Website. Yes.
Got a quick question from the listening audience here. It's from Rick in California. He says, ask John DiNardo how come ancient monuments known to be over 3,600 years old are still very close to their original astrological alignment. If there is a shifting of continents around due to this Planet X, wouldn't their alignments be way off?
What proof does he have that they are still very close to their ancient alignment?
He doesn't state.
Well, he's got to give his evidence, because we know we have tremendous evidence, and I'll get into that right away in one second. I just wanted to finish with this Nibiru Shock 2012 deal, where Marshall Masters actually concluded in his own video, he stated that the Nibiru Shock 2012's evidence, photographic evidence from the South Pole Telescope, was highly credible. Well, okay, now I'll get on to other evidence about the Earth's crust shifting dramatically, and an answer in a way, in an effort to answer the question by this caller that stating his question was, why are the monuments in the same location if the Earth's surface has changed? I can cite various pieces of solid evidence indicating that the Earth's crust has shifted dramatically over the thousands of years, abruptly, at particular points in history, every 3,600 years. So let's go back to the last time Planet X invaded our solar system and created a gravitational and electromagnetic force upon the crust of planet Earth that caused that crust to rotate like the skin of a peach would rotate on an overripe peach. When you wrap your hand around the peach and slide the skin over the flesh within the peach. One piece of evidence is extremely compelling. It's well known, well documented. And that is these mastodons were found. Mastodons or woolly mammoths are huge, like oversized elephants with brown fur, and they have long tusks. They were found in the Arctic, in the Siberian tundra, in the Arctic Circle, over the last 40, 50, many, many years. Actually, I think some of them were even found in the late 1800s, buried beneath tens of feet of ice. When these the Siberians excavated these mammoths, that they were dissected by scientists, and they found tropical vegetation in the mouths of and in the stomachs of these woolly mammoths. Vegetation from the tropics. That's what they were eating. And all of a sudden, they were flash frozen. They had no time even to sit down or curl up in a ball. When you freeze, you know, you tend to curl up and try to get as warm as you can. They didn't even have time to do that. This indicates that the Earth rotated in space in a matter of hours. It rotated vertically. As you know, the Earth rotates horizontally on a daily basis. That's why we get the hours, the changing of it from daylight to sunlight, sunlight to nighttime, because the Earth rotates horizontally. But in this case, the Earth had actually ceased in its rotation, and like a top, it actually tumbled vertically, causing the what happened, and Professor McKenney will tell you this because he studied the archaeology himself, and many others have too, that what happened was that the Siberian area was in a tropical zone. The mammoths were eating vegetation, and within a matter of an hour or so, they rotated to the northerly Arctic location on the Earth, and they were frozen. And through the centuries, ice built up on them, and they became buried. This was noted, this fact that I'm stating was noted in so many documents, so many scientific journals. In fact, it was even mentioned, it's so popular that it was mentioned in the movie The Day After Tomorrow, that, that when they were in the museum scene, they had a stuffed mastodon there, and that's what they mentioned, that these mastodons were found with tropical vegetation in their mouths and in their stomachs. Okay, that's evidence one. Evidence number two, that the Earth's crust has shifted. There is a geologist from the 1970s and 1980s, Carl Loebstrom, and many other. He's just one of many other geologists who have worked with him at the Pisgah lava beds, the P-I-S-G-A-H lava beds near Barstow, California. Now, I have Dr. Carl Loebstrom on videotape where he states that we have lava flows. He says we have found lava flows, and we found the magnetic orientation of the solid solidified lava was from going back thousands of years before the last pole shift. That lava magnetic orientation was different. The geologists are able to tell where the North Pole is by looking at the orientation of the molten lava or when it hardens. And they found that the North Pole, in fact, he was saying, if you had a compass 4,000 years ago, they would not have pointed to the same location on the surface of the Earth as it points to now. Our magnetic North Pole is essentially in the same place, but the crust itself has shifted, so the geographical North Pole was different. Professor McKenney and others will tell you that before the last pole shift, about 3,600, 3,500 years ago, the North Pole was actually around Toronto, Canada. Toronto, that area was the North Pole. Now visualize the globe if you can. You have Canada, now is on the eastern side, or on the American continent, sort of toward the center of the Earth, getting toward the equator. And then you have Siberia on the opposite side, which was a tropical zone. So the tropical, well, what was then tropical Siberia shifted northward toward the North Pole, and what was then the North Pole, Toronto, Canada, shifted southward.
Hey, John?
And yes?
I've heard Dr. Bill Deagle state on his shows that magnetic North Pole is shifting like 41 or 43 miles a year towards the southeast, I believe he said. Is that accurate?
I don't know what the exact amount is, but I know it's shifting. There's what's something called the Chandler wobble that was noticed at least a century ago. This wobble has become very erratic now. You know, it was sort of predictable decades ago, the direction of the wobble. But now it's becoming very erratic because of the electromagnetic influences that are exerted by Planet X as it gets closer and closer. But it's true, the geographic North Pole is wandering pretty severely now.
Hey, John.
Yes.
What other historical evidence from maybe 10,000 years ago would definitely validate our claims here?
Okay. We're going back now. According to Brent Miller and many other scientists, Brent Miller is with the Horizon Project, thehorizonproject.com. Brent Miller states that there was another pole shift. It occurred around 9,000 years ago. Actually, I probably narrowed it down more accurately to around 8,600 B.C. Brent Miller says it was around roughly, and he doesn't have an accurate fix on that time, the actual time, but he says it was around 9,000 B.C. I figured 8,600 B.C. is closer to the real date. At that time, occurred was the sinking of the continent of Atlantis, with the monolithic continent around the world, all over the world, where the Americas formed by the breakup of this continent. When Planet X came in, it caused this tremendous land mass to fracture. And if you take the map of Europe and Africa together and move them closer, move them in toward the east coast of the American continent, you'll see they fit together very, very nicely, like two pieces in a puzzle. So it's evident that they were broken apart. Likewise, with the western coast of the American continent, facing the Pacific Ocean, there was a connection there with Asia, and that's why we see so many people in the American continent who have Asian genetic characteristics. Also, with the pyramids, you see the pyramids in the Mayan and Aztec cultures of South and Central America. And you see also the pyramids in Egypt. So this was all one continent at one time. Brent Miller and others, and I've got videotape information too from others back in the 1980s, where they found, Brent Miller tells us, that there are sunken cities found very deep off the coast of most of the continents of the world. Off the coast of Japan, there are sunken cities deep beneath the ocean. Off the coast of Cuba, there's a sunken city has been found. Off the coast of Florida, the Bahamas, I'm starting to get my echo back again. Also, the U.S. Navy is doing salvaging expeditions. They've been doing salvaging expeditions off the northern coast of Australia for many years, secretly retrieving remains from the sunken cities off the coast of northern Australia. So there is tremendous evidence that these cities were sunk beneath the sea. The great psychic Edgar Cayce, while in a sleeping trance, he never knew what he said, incidentally. He would go into a sleep, and then he would say things that came to him. And I know it sounds supernatural and unbelievable, but many of the things, what he said was actually true, actually turned out to be true. But anyway, he predicted that this sinking of the continents would occur again, and he said many a coastland today will become the bottom of the ocean. And he said, what will happen in his trance? He said, Japan, the greater part of Japan must go into the sea. He said, San Francisco, Los Angeles, both of them will be destroyed before New York, even.
Hey, John?
Yes.
What are your thoughts about this massive fireball that exploded over seven Midwestern states Thursday night? Did you talk about that already or not?
No, I didn't. We can pretty much surmise that the evidence is getting clearer all the time that we've got a horde of comets and meteors, which are part of that, what I call a bee swarm. Imagine a huge beehive being floating through the air, traveling through the air, and around this beehive is a swarm of bees. Well, we've got a bee swarm of comets, huge objects, which, in comparison to the beehive, are very small, but in comparison to our own world, these are very large. Comets, asteroids, meteors, all encircling in a gravitational grip, encircling planet X. And when that beehive starts getting closer to you, if you were standing near a soaring, cruising beehive, and that beehive started to pass over your head, you would start getting hit by a few bees and start getting stung by a few bees. Well, we're getting stung right now by meteors and comets. In 2004, if people, now Professor McCanny does not like people to be, you know, using his material or whatever they say, listen to his program. So I'm going to tell you to do what he tells everybody else to do, is go to his radio archives, jmccannyscience.com, and go to the archive of the June 17th, 2004 broadcast. June 17th, 2004. I'm quite sure I got the date correct. And when you listen to it, you'll hear him say that leaks are coming out from all over the place, from professional astronomers and military types, down at Project Wormwood, which is an observatory in Australia. And he says the leaks are coming out, and he's quoting the leaks, quote, that a mini solar system is moving into our solar system. Now, what is a solar system? Well, we know our solar system is defined as a sun with celestial bodies, planets, revolving around it. Again, we've got the beehive configuration. That's what a solar system is. It doesn't have to actually be a bright, burning sun like our sun. It could be a solar system with a dead sun. Well, planet X is sort of a dead sun. It's smoldering, it's hot, but it's not large enough to actually go into nuclear fusion and create sunlight. But it's indeed, by definition, by scientific definition, planet X is a solar system. So the Professor McCanny reported that these leaks are coming out from all over the place. Astronomers, professional astronomers, military types saying we have found a mini solar system moving into our system. And that's what I meant by this beehive.
Hey, John.
With bees swarming around it.
Hey, John.
Yes.
That's something I actually learned about within the last week, that we actually have another sun. I don't think I ever was aware of that. That's really interesting.
Yes, that has been stated by so many researchers. I mean, and in fact, it's because it's well known in the field of astronomy that 3 out of 4 solar systems have a twin sun, and that's why they call these solar systems binary. Those are the common type, and of course, our solar system is binary also, is common. And that's what allows Planet X to go back and forth, like sort of like a, you know, traveling like a bicycle chain, traveling around the pedal sprocket wheel of the bike, and then going back around to travel around the rear sprocket wheel of the bicycle, so to speak.
Hey, John.
And we get this periodic effect. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention we got less than 4 minutes until the end of the show. If you want to let folks know about your weekly radio show and how they might contact you, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, yeah. First of all, if you want to find out how to protect yourself, what I believe a person can do to protect themselves both physically and spiritually, supernaturally, and I think there's supernatural protection is probably the most effective, please email me at planetxnow@yahoo.com. planetxnow@yahoo.com, and I will put you on a list where you can get periodic information. Maybe every couple of days you'll get an audio track from the Planet X research, my radio broadcast, and also some literature that will show you how you can protect yourself.
And by the way, John is pretty good at replying to emails, at least with me he is anyway. And I also wanted to let folks know that I'm archiving a lot of these Planet X radio dramas that he's sending me in the mail. So you'll gradually see those posted onto my website.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that, Sheldon. That's a great service that you're doing. my radio program is on Sundays. You may not be able to get it if you don't have shortwave and some, you know, if the reception's pretty good. It's shortwave frequency 3185. 3185 is the frequency.
Yeah, but they can go online and listen. If they go to wwrb.org, is it?
That's right. Don't get that confused with, some people get it confused with www. No, forget about that. This is just two W's. Just type in two W's. WWRB, as in Robert Boy, .org. And you will get that shortwave station that broadcasts at 10 o'clock, but it has to be at 10 o'clock Eastern on Sundays. Sundays, 10 o'clock Eastern time. And you can click on listen online and hear the program simulcast as it's being broadcast on shortwave. What else can I say is, you know, we should, next time we can definitely talk about physical preparation and protection. We need to talk about that soon. Water is so important. Water is more important than food, as you know. What I do is I collect as many empty bottles as I can. I can collect all the empty milk bottles from my niece and other people. And I just rinse them out real well with hot water and fill them up with tap water. Don't worry about not having pure water. I mean, tap water is good enough to survive on when you don't have any water at all.
Oh, John, that's the end of the show, John. Thanks for joining me.
Okay.
Have a good night, folks. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. Good night.
Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.